Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Jim Garrity is out with a cold today, and Dan Foster, a news editor at National Review Online, once again, more than ably filling those shoes. Dan, how are you?
I'm good. How are you, Greg?
Doing great. And we've got some good news, although it took a little bit of teeth pulling here because, of course, liberals piled on Rush Limbaugh incessantly for days, if not weeks, following his very much ill-advised comments regarding Sandra Fluke. But conservatives also tried to point out that Obama's super PAC took $1 million donation from Bill Maher, who said far worse things about Sarah Palin. Their entire communications team, including Bill Burton, who used to be on the White House press team, and now he, I believe, is working for the super PAC, says that you really can't compare the two. One's a comedian. One is the de facto head of the Republican Party. And the Republicans were also pointing out that David Axelrod, the president's lead campaign guy, or at least one of them, was scheduled to go on Maher's show. Well, turns out after all of this bluster, there's a scheduling conflict, Dan, and David Axelrod's not going to make it after all. So I'm sure that had nothing to do with the comments and everything to do with just the busy campaign season.
No, I can't imagine that it had anything to do with the comments. I mean, I was early on in pointing out after Rush Limbaugh's comments that he really is held to a selectively higher standard than guys like Bill Maher because his audience is so much bigger. Now, that just proves that he's more effective at what he does, but Rush would be the first person to tell you that he's an entertainer. Bill Maher actually has, you know, pretensions to being something more important, as was evidenced by his very public $1 million donation to Obama's PAC. So that's there, unless they want to give that money back. If they want to play the game of associating Limbaugh's comments with the avowed positions of the Republican establishment, then, you know, they have to answer for, as you said, Maher, who said much worse things on many occasions. And let's not forget, he got kicked off his last show, Politically Incorrect, for calling the 9/11 hijackers courageous.
Right.
So if they want to play that game of guilt by association, then they're welcome to it with Maher. But I will say this thing. I find Bill Maher unwatchable, and there's a lot of expletives I could use to describe him. And I don't really hate that many liberals. A lot of my friends are liberals. I'm friendly with liberal writers. But Bill Maher, I just think, is a spiteful and kind of moronic and lazy liberal ideologue. So I don't have much time for him. But we had some conversation here yesterday about whether or not conservatives should go on Bill Maher, because he often gets these ringer conservatives on his show to balance the two or three liberals that he has on his panels. But our own Raihan Salam, who blogs at The Agenda at NRO, has been a guest a number of times. And I'll tell you something, he is a pleasure to watch because he speaks at about 1,000 miles an hour, and he's always the smartest guy in the room. And he sometimes gets real fired up, and he just makes everybody else on the panel and Maher look like idiots. And they really don't even try to keep up with him because he's such a tour de force. So I'm torn on whether a conservative should go on Maher, because if he's willing to let conservatives like Raihan on, I hope they go on every episode.
Well, that makes it at least a little bit more watchable than it currently is, because you're right about his smarmy, holier-than-thou attitude, although he would never use that word given his militant atheism. But beyond that, this is clearly a win given the poll numbers for how women voters have not fallen for this fake war on women line from the Democrats, and now the Obama campaign backing off from the Maher show, at least a couple of minor victories there, and hopefully we can focus on the real issues of this campaign, one of which ought to be the president's failed health care policy. The president, of course, sold the health care policy in a number of ways that turned out not to be true, including being able to keep your policy if you like it, all sorts of other things, including the fact that over the first 10 years that this policy would cost less than $1 trillion. Republicans repeatedly pointed out that there was a lot of accounting gimmickry going on here, that the revenues were coming in for 10 years, but the actual full program didn't kick in until 2014. Well, now the CBO has actually done a 10-year estimate on the real program, and lo and behold, it's not $900 billion or whatever the White House was trying to claim a couple years ago. It's $1.76 trillion, which I'm pretty sure, Dan, is exactly what Republicans a couple years ago were claiming it would be once the full thing was implemented.
Yeah, we knew this was coming, but it's still, I think, it's still good for the broader public who's not as mired in the nuts and bolts of this atrocity as we've been over the last few years. It's good for them to see a number like this, because what happened is, cynically, the Obama administration wrote a bill that didn't kick in until 2014, thus enabling them to tell this basically lie that it would cost less than $1 trillion because of the rules for how you have to report the cost of a bill through a 10-year budget window. But now we've only got – and the other thing to keep in mind is it's $1.7 trillion, but that's only the first 9 years of it. We won't get the first 10 years until next year. So everyone's expecting the CBO to come out and tell us that it's going to be over $2 trillion at that point, a true 10-year cost. And even worse than that is what we're getting for the money. The CBO also said that this is going – that the bill's going to dramatically increase the roles of Medicaid, which is already a strap for cash program and not, by the way, the ideal kind of insurance that you'd want every American consumer to have access to. And the cost of expanding coverage, period, is higher than previously thought and also increases coverage less than was previously thought, according to the CBO. So we're going to end up with a bill that doesn't even succeed on its own goals, you know, but its own stated goals of expanding coverage to the levels that were promised. And we're going to see one that does a limited expansion of coverage at incredibly high per person cost to taxpayers. And we're going to see a bill that costs, as you said, roughly twice what it was sold to us as in 2009. So my question has always been, whether Obamacare – I've never wondered whether Obamacare is going to fail. It's going to fail. I'm as sure about that as I am about any dearly held political belief. My question has always been, will it fail quickly enough that the political will be towards repeal? Because when big government fails slowly, you often get more of it, not less. So my only worry is that Obamacare will fail slowly. But this is good news for the argument that it'll fail quickly.
Yeah, certainly would think that would be the case, and that gives the Republican nominee and Republican candidates around the country an argument regardless of what the Supreme Court does on its arguments in a few months here. But the cost should be another major point made by whoever the Republican nominee is, as well as Senate and House candidates around the country. Dan, an important point, though, that I think you made, which dovetails well with our third martini, is that this bill will not be a success even based on the administration's own goals. And apparently success in general is not a real high priority for this administration, unless, of course, their name is on the ballot. But Michelle Obama is going to be leading the delegation, American delegation to the Summer Olympics this year in London for the 2012 Games. And here's what she had to say. I believe this was just yesterday, since the British Prime Minister's wife was with her. Quote, "The true spirit of the Games isn't confined to just the 2 weeks of competition in the summer. It's not about who wins the gold, right? You've heard that before. It's not just about who wins the medals, right? That's not what the Olympics are about. Instead, the Olympic Games are about commitment, right? It's about determination, and most importantly, it's about teamwork. Teamwork, right? Dan, I remember the Miracle on Ice. I was, you know, it was okay that we beat the Russians, but it was just that the fact that the guys were working hard and teamwork. What is she talking about here? The whole point of the Olympics during the Cold War was to beat the Russians in the medal count. Basically, we're having one of the world's greatest athletic competition. The point is to win. Yes, you want to do it with dignity, and if you don't win, you don't act like a spoiled brat or anything, but the point of the competition is to win, to paraphrase Herman Edwards.
Oh, I was going to say, you're killing me as a Jets fan over here. You're going Herm Edwards on me. Ugly memories. You're actually right. I mean, we criticize Democrats for being against American exceptionalism, but it turns out they're just against exceptionalism. You know, full stop. It's not to say that teamwork and dignity and the spirit of togetherness engendered by the Olympics, I think those are all fine and good things and part of what the Olympics are about. But you're absolutely right. It's about the spirit of competition. And, you know, it's about winning, but it's also about competing. And when there aren't any winners, there isn't any competition. And that, as we know, dovetails into some other beliefs that are shared by liberals. So nobody who runs the 100 meters is worried about teamwork either. So that was a bizarre thing to say. There's relay races for that sort of thing. But really, the Olympics is about individual and team exceptionalism. It's about competing at the highest levels and overcoming your opponents. And it's a beautiful thing. It should be celebrated.
Absolutely right. And let's hope we beat everybody in the medal count. We generally tend to do that since the breakup of the Soviet Union. We're actually even pretty good at the Winter Games now, since we invented half the sports that have been added to the with all the freestyle skiing and everything. But hey, we'll take it, and we hope our guys win and conduct themselves well. Dan, as always, great to have you with us, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks a lot, Greg.
Daniel Foster of National Review Online. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us again on Thursday for the next Three Martini Lunch.